This is SEC Talk. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back. Glad to have you guys here. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, Cody is here, and he has already started this thing off laughing, and we got it going first thing today. Woo, we're back. We're back. That's all we can say. There's nothing else really to say other than, hey, we're back.
We're bringing a show to you. It depends on how you define back, man.
That's true. Hey, we got a lot of fun stuff to get to. We've had some huge games this weekend. Cody doesn't want to talk about one of the games, but we're going to talk about it.
It depends on who you are.
We're going to talk about it ad nauseum in the end of it.
I'm still going through recovery, man.
It's only Sunday after Saturday. All right, well, anyways, Twitter. You can see it on the screen there if you're watching on YouTube at SEC Talk 20. Y'all can follow us there on YouTube if you guys are watching. Hit that subscribe button. Go ahead and hit the like button on the video as well. Listen on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you give us that 5-star rate and review it. And then also in the description of the podcast, wherever you listen as well as on YouTube, we will leave the support link. If you guys feel like supporting the show, we'd be more than glad to have you guys do it. Just hit that link. It gives you a few options to be able to do it. News, we're going to run through the top 25. Then we're going to break down all of the games around the SEC, finishing off with a very important one. And then we're going to jump down to our picks from this past week, as well as some of the games from around the rest of the country. Cody, you got the top 25 pulled up there in front of you, or you want me to run through it real quick?
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about the top 25?
Yeah, I can get it. Okay. Here we go.
I'll let you run through it for us.
I don't want to talk about it at all, man. Listen. It's been rough, okay? All right, here we go, guys. I'm starting at the bottom, okay? I don't want to see the top of the...
Go ahead.
I ain't going to that trauma yet.
However you feel, however you feel better about it. How about that?
There ain't enough whiskey in the world for that one, man. Anyway, starting right here at number 25, you have Texas jumping or falling to 25th. After that, I hate that. It gets me every time. San Diego State jumping up one spot to 24. SMU jumping up one spot, 23. NC State jumping up one spot to 22. Texas A&M jumping up one or six spots to 21st. You're welcome. Florida staying where they're at in 20th. BYU dropping from 10th all the way down to 19th. Arizona jumping up from 22nd to 18th. Arkansas falling from 13th to 17th in a really close game there with Ole Miss. Wake Forest up from 19th to 16th. Coastal Carolina jumping up to 15th. I'll let you have the rest of them.
You want me to take the top 15 there? Hey, I can do that. All right. Probably need to have it all. All right. So 15, I don't know if you said Coastal right there in 15 or not. But anyways, 14, Notre Dame. 13, Ole Miss after taking down Arkansas in a big game this past weekend. 12, Oklahoma State. 11, Kentucky. Got a big matchup coming up here in Athens this upcoming weekend. Michigan State at 10, Oregon 9, Michigan at 8, Penn State at 7, Ohio State 6, Alabama 5th, Oklahoma in 4th, Cincinnati in 3rd. Iowa second, and the Georgia Bulldogs ranking in that top spot for the first time. Check this out. Didn't realize this, but this is the first time Georgia has been ranked number one in the AP poll since 1982.
I thought they were ranked last year. No, it was Ohio State that was first, and they were second and third.
The only time Georgia has been ranked one AP poll-wise was a preseason poll, I think in 2013. 7, 8, something like that. One of those was the only time in an AP poll since 1982 that Georgia's actually been ranked one. And we talked about it. You know, it's really a back and forth between
playoffs.
Hell yeah. Even then, Georgia still, there was the, yeah, that was the college football playoff poll. They did rank first, but in the AP poll, they have not. But
that's what I'm saying. I was thinking the playoffs.
Yeah. You know, we've gone back and forth between. Is Alabama number one? Is Georgia number one? which team's number one. And when I've been saying this for the past few weeks, they're both interchangeable until one of them loses. And unfortunately, that did come this weekend, which we're going to wait before we get into that game exactly. That's got to be the last one that we get to as far as the SEC goes, because we can't jump into that right off the bat. We got to ease into it. We're going to ease into that one. Cause we can't nobody dive
head first. That's like jumping into a swimming pool, man.
Yeah, it's kind of tough.
That's so we're like gonna jumping into a cold swimming pool. You don't. It's rough.
Hey, who did you call?
There's a lot of trauma.
Who did you call? Did you call a therapist? Did you call? I mean, who did you call to help you cope last night? When I called you this morning, I was surprised to get you on the phone. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to talk to you today or not.
Jack Daniels.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Might not be the greatest. Might not be the greatest coping mechanism there.
Jack.
Call Jack, and if he didn't answer, then you call Jim. Is that the way it works?
Man, look, whoever picks up first, I'm gonna take it. Okay.
Yeah.
I did have a buddy of mine. I was texting him, like, as soon as they kicked it, dude. He's like, I'm going to bed. Like, me too.
I did that. Don't worry. I did that in the 2017 National Championship game. Nick Saban lined up for the field goal, and I was like, Georgia just lost this game, and somehow y'all missed it. And I was like, maybe it's meant to be. Then Georgia kicks this long field goal. I was like, there's a chance. Second and – yeah, that's just say second down. That's all you got to say. And I saw it go in the air. I saw it catch. I saw no yellow. I clicked the power button, went and got into bed. That was the end of that night. And the next morning felt just as bad as that night. Look, isn't it crazy how football affects us like that?
It's a South thing, dude. That's just as simple to put it. It's a South thing. It's an SEC thing.
True. Hey, speaking of SEC, we are SEC Talk, so let's dive into some SEC football. Let's start it off real easy. Like I said, we're going to ease into it. Let's start it off with the easing of Florida's route over Vanderbilt, 42-0. Emory Jones comes in this one, 273 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception on the night. Anthony Richardson did come in and get a few passes. He did make a mistake on the night throwing an interception when he did come in. But, I mean, it was Florida from the start, 14-0, 21-0 at the half. I know you and I talked a little bit. It was kind of like, is Florida really only up a few touchdowns in this? Then they scored 3 more touchdowns in the third and don't score in the fourth. I mean, Vandy, we've talked about this. They're one of those teams that it's like, how are they still in the SEC? You know?
Look, man, they're the designated punching bag for the SEC. It's as simple as that's the simplest way to put it.
Poor Vandy.
They're there just to get beat up at this point. I mean, poor Vandy. Oh, Dandy Vandy. But the fact that Florida only had 2 touchdowns going into the half, or no, what was it, 21?
3, yeah.
It was 14 at the half, wasn't it?
21, nothing.
Huh?
21.
Well, it was 14 at the end of the first. That's what it was. The fact that Florida only had 21 nothing going into halftime against Vandy, I don't know what happened Saturday, but it was not a good day for for a couple of the powerhouses. That's all I'm going to say for right now. We'll jump into the details point here in a little bit. Besides that, we'll jump on down to North Texas. Don't even say nothing. Versus Missouri. Missouri coming up win there, 48-35. Connor Bazelak going 21 for 33 with 160 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Oh, and how do you say? Tyler Beatty?
Yeah.
217 yards on 17 attempts and 2 touchdowns. That one shouldn't have been that close. Honestly, with it being North Texas, I thought Missouri was a little better than that. Oh, apparently not.
Well, that was the thing, you know, coming into this one, we all thought that Mizzou would pretty much walk away with it, and there in the first half, they did. I mean, at one point, you know, they're up, what was it, 35, was it? Let's see. 31. It was 31-7 going to the half. I mean, Mizzou had it in the bag, and then don't score in the third, that's okay. You make it 31-14, you still got it in the bag, and then they give up 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Now, luckily for them, they do come in and score at least 17 in the fourth quarter also, but giving up three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, letting North Texas right back in this game. I was shocked because at one point, like I was saying, in the fourth quarter, going to the fourth, it's 31-14. They score a couple of touchdowns to make it 41-14. Then it's kind of mop-up duty, really, 41-21, 41-28, slowly letting them come back in before they score again, and then pretty much put it away. But 35-48 in the end did not look like they were nearly as far away as they should have been in this one. The defense gave up some late points in this one.
Yeah, which, I mean, for Missouri, you really don't expect a whole lot there anyways. They're not, you know, an Ole Miss, an Arkansas even this year, or Kentucky. You know, they're a mediocre team. So for them to struggle with North Texas is not really surprising. But at the same time, you know, it is what it is. But yeah. I think we can jump on down to the next game that was – I'll just throw this one in there, okay? I ain't gonna lie, I just threw this one up. South Carolina and Kentucky – or Tennessee, I'm sorry. I saw Kentucky scroll across my phone and it messed me up. South Carolina and Tennessee up in Knoxville. It was, I think this one's closer than it actually seemed. I mean, oh, never mind.
Now Tennessee walked away with it. Tennessee had to play
in the second half.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were up 38-7 at the halftime. Then they just kind of like forgot how to play, which ain't uncommon.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the answer for Tennessee has been, you know, they started the season with Joe Milton at quarterback. And I hate to knock a guy, but he's not the guy. And there's a reason that since Hendon Hooker has came in the game for Tennessee, he has absolutely taken over. He's come into this game and made a huge difference. We got a little... Oh, okay. I was going to say we got a little bit. It's all right. But Tyon Evans, I mean, him as well. He rushes in this one 119 yards and a touchdown. But Hendon Hooker, 225 yards, three touchdowns on the night. Tennessee's all of a sudden starting to come alive. Hendon Hooker, to me, is the answer. I mean, that's the answer for Tennessee. Tennessee didn't have much to be able to answer for with Joe Milton as the quarterback. But since Hendon Hooker has taken over, Tennessee looks like a whole different football team, a team that may compete for the East. Not going to say they're going to win it, but they can at least compete for it.
They can compete, but it ain't going to be for the first two positions, I guarantee you. It'll be for third or fourth or midway.
Yeah. Right now, they have at least
I mean,
started to work on it.
They're just kind of yeah, my preseason break, I just thrown it out. I don't even know where it's at anymore.
Yeah, that's what I was about to look at. See, I had Tennessee 5-7, finishing fifth in the East. That all of a sudden will change. They'll probably finish – really, they'll probably still finish fourth in the East. They'll follow behind Tennessee or behind
– Well, they're 4-2.
Yeah, they'll finish behind Kentucky. They'll finish behind Florida. They'll finish above Missouri, which I thought would have been a little bit opposite. But Kentucky, they were – you know, I was kind of preseason hyping Kentucky, and sure enough, that Kentucky's come out of nowhere.
Well, my thing is you look at Tennessee's next – 1, 2, 3, 4 games. They got Ole Miss, Bama, Kentucky, and Georgia. And the way Kentucky's playing right now,
yeah,
you can go and guarantee probably 4 losses right there. And then they finish off with South Alabama and Vandy. So,
yeah,
they can still finish good. But at the same time, I don't see them being that much of an impact. Unless they somehow slip up and beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
Or unless Alabama forgets how to play football again, because apparently they did against A&M.
We're getting there. We'll get to that
here in a little bit.
Hey, but you're absolutely correct. Over the next 5 weeks, Tennessee could very well likely lose 4 games. They could go from 4-2 to all of a sudden a 4-6 football team before finishing even at 6-6 by the time they get to the end of the season. And that's still a little bit better than what I've got them, being at 5-4. Or what did I have them? I just said it, 5-7. So, still pretty close on that.
Yeah. Well, I think the next contest for them is the team who actually is our next talk of the minute is Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky taking on LSU, and Kentucky just – I mean, the first half, going in 14-0 lead, and then pretty much shutting down LSU all the first half, but then allowing 21 points, but still getting their 28 at the end. Kentucky's a team to go watch out for, dude. That's going to be a dark horse in the SEC East.
Oh yeah,
they can really pull a South Carolina slip up and beat Georgia, and they're in a position to put themselves in a really good spot for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild to think, you know, preseason talking about it, we're not really talking about Kentucky getting to the playoffs. We're just talking about Kentucky. I mean, in my preseason, looking at it here, I got them 8-4 preseason, finishing second in the East, which right now they are right on track to do. Looking at their upcoming schedule, they beat LSU, they got Georgia, that's a tough one, traveling to Mississippi State, should be able to handle it, but then they got Tennessee, Vandy, New Mexico State, and Louisville, all winnable games. Kentucky may have a couple of losses in there, but diving into the game, this is the thing that may also make the difference. Will Levis, 14 for 17, 145 yards, 3 touchdowns, not a lot of yards, but 3 touchdowns through the air. Their answer right now has been the run game. Chris Rodriguez, 16 carries, 147 yards, and a touchdown. But I'm going to tell you, there's only two teams that are undefeated in the SEC at this point. That's Kentucky, that's Georgia. That ends this coming weekend, Saturday. Kentucky travels to Georgia to play between the hedges. That will be no longer. One team, no matter who it is, will only be the only undefeated team in the SEC left at that point. And we're going to see who it is. Look at this, rushing. Kentucky ran the ball for 330 yards on LSU, 330 yards. That is what they are leaning on, and they are about to go up against the front of Georgia that you're not going to be able to do that against. So it's going to be interesting to see what Kentucky's game plan is going to be Saturday pass. Coming into Athens.
They're going to have to throw against Georgia. And I think that a lot of people, Georgia has a really good front seven. Probably, I would say they're the best front seven in college football.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's proven. Even the stat numbers and all posted.
But you got to think, Mark Stoops knows what he's doing in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
He's done had enough time to build up some teams, and it's showing. Kentucky can come up with some trick plays, and we've seen Mark Stoops do it before. To come up with something you ain't really seen, all of a sudden you're like, where did he come up with this at?
Yeah.
I mean – this is one of the games, and I know there's a bunch of Georgia fans, like, oh, we're going to blow them out. Look, do not overlook Kentucky.
No, absolutely not.
Because I'm going to refer back to is that. I'm going to refer back to the South Carolina game, 2 years ago? Where South Carolina wasn't doing that great. Comes into Athens and beats Georgia, and everybody's like, but look, it can happen.
Oh, yeah, it happens. Yeah, I mean, I know another team in the SEC West that came in and kind of did the same thing against an unranked team yesterday. We'll get to that here in a minute. Looking at talking about there, though, Georgia right now really beat up also, really beat up. You're playing a backup quarterback. You've got five of your main wide receivers who are out. You got multiple offensive linemen. You got defensive guys that are also out. A couple of guys that went down in the Auburn game. You got Kentucky, who is reeling right now. They've got all the guys that they need. They've got a good running back. They got a good quarterback. They got a good wide receiver. They've got the answer, and they're good on defense as well. The hard part for Kentucky is going to be going on the road, but you do have a gap coming up for Georgia. Kentucky, you get the bye. You got Florida, Missouri, Tennessee, Southern, and then Georgia Tech. Two of those games, Kentucky, Florida, and three really in Tennessee, having to travel to Tennessee could be a little bit tough for the Dogs coming up. You talk about this. Georgia, I was looking at this earlier. Georgia got really lucky with the way that they lined up the schedule. They really only have two tough road games, and that's at Auburn and at Tennessee, because Florida, that's neutral site. Clemson, that was a neutral site. And then at Vandy, that's not a tough game. You know, that's not a tough atmosphere either. So they got their first test on the road at Auburn this past week. Now Kentucky has to go to Athens, who is going to be the hard place to play moving forward.
But I think, too, with Georgia, too, looking at this coming up, they got Kentucky this week. You're down a good bit of players. Your main goal in this game is to get a win and to limit injuries, because your next week game is in the Swamp. No. And we done seen how that stadium can affect
games. Well, it's in Jacksonville. It's always a neutral side, the greatest outdoor cocktail party. Split 50-50.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's technically – that's home field advantage for Florida for the most part.
Oh, no. It's a neutral site. You would think it is being in Florida, but it's not. They sell tickets 50-50. It's 50% Georgia fans, 50% Florida fans in there.
They got to. That's what I'm saying. That's like the Red River rivalry with Texas and Oklahoma. It's in Dallas, Texas. But it's still, I mean, they still do it 50-50, but not all, you know, it's not going to be 100% 50-50. So,
yeah, it's going to be a good one. That's a tough one coming up.
They try to do it the best they can. But still, you're playing Florida, and Florida is not looking bad.
No, Florida's not a bad team. There's a reason they're still in the top. Yeah, there's a reason they're still in the top 25. I still think Dan Mullen's got to figure his quarterback out.
He needs to figure out what they're doing. Because he still seems – I know he wants to go with – I just lost the dude's name.
Emory Jones.
But he's not 100% all the time. He's still kind of, you know, rough around the edges.
You know, I've got a couple of thoughts in mind for this. And this portrays – we're about to get to the Georgia-Auburn game coming up, kind of coming off the tail of the Kentucky conversation here. And that is moving forward to Georgia. Obviously, you got to get through Kentucky first. We're going to talk – we've got 2 weeks in between this Kentucky game, a bye week before Georgia and Florida play. But I've got a couple of things here. One, in this Kentucky game, you could very well see JT Daniels come back for Georgia. I think that two-week period – may or may not. Stetson, he's been doing good, so he may be able to come in and do something here. And you got a great backup in him to be able to do the job. You get a bye week, more than likely you get JT Daniels back. Another guy who's pushing to be back for the Florida game is George Pickens. Will it happen? I don't know. But he's pushing to do that. Don't want him to get hurt in doing it. But here's a thought that I had. Is I wonder if Dan Mullen is sitting back going, all right, hey, I've lost SEC East. There's no way that even if I beat Georgia, I can get in the East and make my way back in the conversation for the playoffs. So maybe I just sit Richardson. I sit him a while, and I do exactly what Alabama did in the national championship game, and I take Emory Jones, put him on the field, and then at halftime, give me Richardson to come in and save the day. I don't know that for sure, but Dan Mullen has done some strange things so far this year, so why not?
I wouldn't be surprised if he throws a tight end at a quarterback at this point. I mean him and Les Miles could be brothers on just the weird play calling they do.
Yeah.
Because every time I've seen Dan Mullen play, even when he was at Mississippi State, it just made no sense. I'm like, what are you calling? I mean, the way Kentucky has been playing, I would not overlook them.
No, absolutely not.
Because even if they do lose to Georgia – my thing is, I'm going to jump in this real quick. Say Kentucky either beats Georgia or loses to Georgia. Either way, one of those two teams is going to have one loss. So you'll have at least a one-loss team in the East. As long as Bama can win out the rest of the year, you'll have another one-loss team in the West. When it comes to the college playoffs, you look at how the teams are playing so far. You would have to take at least one of those two one-loss SEC teams to go. And if Georgia and Alabama meet in the SEC championship and Bama somehow figures out how to play football and beats Georgia, because Georgia apparently has a curse against Bama when it comes to the fourth quarter, you have to take two SEC teams.
Yeah,
had to at least take two SEC teams with one loss.
Yeah, I thought coming into this previous week with A&M and Alabama playing, first of all, none of us expected Alabama to lose to A&M. That was the first thing. Well, then you move forward, and it was, all right, well, Alabama should win this. Georgia and Alabama, more than likely, they're on a collision course to be 1-2 facing off against each other in the SEC championship game. Even if one of them loses in the SEC championship game, the other will be in. One with a loss, one being undefeated. It's still possible to happen. I know Lee Corso, he called before the game and game day this past weekend. He said they're going to meet up. Alabama's going to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, but Georgia will be undefeated, so it will still allow Georgia to get in, and then Georgia beats Alabama for the national championship. It may happen. I don't know. We're going to see. It could be something fun to look forward to, and I still think there's the possibility of that happening. It's going to take a lot to get there, And we've got a lot of football to be played because many things can happen between now and then. We talked about it. I mean, the prime opportunity right here for Georgia to fall to a 6-0 Kentucky coming to your house, who has been just riding on a high horse for a while. So is Georgia. But Georgia, I will give them credit here. Not trying to be biased. You can see it in the background of the video. The defense is I've never seen a defense as good as Georgia's has been. Now, again.
Oh, yeah, Georgia's defense too this year is one of the best.
Yeah.
But it's those front seven that make the biggest impact.
Oh, yeah. I'll still be curious to see if somebody can beat them deep, but right now they haven't hadn't had to worry about it. They hadn't really been tested in that.
They ain't had the chance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is Georgia has eliminated that deep pass because of the threat they have on that front seven.
That's true. When you get in the pocket that fast, you know.
Get off the line quick. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're eliminating 30-yard passes because as quick as they're getting to the line. But at the same time, you know, like with Alabama in the past few games, Bama has not been throwing deep balls. I mean, you talked about this earlier. The Alabama team that would launch 80-yard passes just for the fun of it, they're not doing that no more.
It's weird.
It goes back to the quarterback, and I'll get on that subject at the end of this podcast because what the heck? But it's
– really hope that was just ice falling in the ice maker and not somebody coming to get me. Well, I tell you what. Let's jump into the Auburn. Let's jump into the Auburn Georgia game. Let's run through these games and get down to it, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So, you talked about it a little bit earlier. Stetson Bennett being the backup, 14 for 21, 231 yards, 2 touchdowns. Let me hit you with a stat that you didn't know, and I guarantee you didn't know it because I didn't know it. Not that you wouldn't know it that I didn't know it, but I don't think either of us would have even thought that this is actually a true stat either. Stetson Bennett. I know. Kind of all over the place there. Stetson Bennett. In comparison, this is leading the charge in the SEC. The SEC Network put this up. Check it out. Leading the charge. Highest QBR by SEC players this season so far. Stetson Bennett leads that QBR. This is with a minimum of 50 action plays. Stetson Bennett with a 95. Bryce Young right behind him with an 89. JT Daniels with an 88. Matt Corral with an 85. You take these guys. Stetson Bennett doesn't have a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns. JT Daniels doesn't have a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns. Bryce Young and Matt Corral, the two guys they're talking about being the front runners in the Heisman race, are right there in the mix of these guys, and Stetson Bennett leads the SEC in that. Unbelievable to think that, especially being a backup. He has played 50% of this season as a starter now.
Well, I will say, too, with Stetson Bennett, though, is he's accurate on his throws. I mean, he went 14 for 21. And Jordan Hare, which is pretty hard to do, for 231 yards. And they've been medium to deep passes. I mean, yeah, he'll have those little green balls every once in a while, but most part, he's throwing at least 15 to 20 yards or 10 to 15 yards just about every throw. Where yeah. If you look at Bryce Young, Bryce Young's not throwing over 15 yards. Mm. Like, he has a handful of passes that's been over, I think, 20, 25. So Stetson, when he gets in there, he's making the most of his time in the game.
Yeah, and now you,
I think it's why he's
but such
a high QBR.
Well, yeah, but you can't discredit because he also has a lot of bombs. He had it in this game. The other game that he started in UAB previous to last week against Arkansas as well, because they didn't have quite as much an Arkansas game, but he did have one bomb play in that against. UAB, you know, he was 5 for 5 with 5 touchdowns and over 200 something yards in that game. And then in this one, he had a massive throw for a 60-yard touchdown to Lad McConkey. Funny thing that I saw somebody put up, that McConkey, he's a good lad, isn't he? It's just kind of a funny thing anyway. 135 yards and a touchdown to McConkey. Could have had another one if he had the arm to get it to him. So he's been elite when it comes to being a backup quarterback. That's the crazy thing. He's a backup. He's not even he's and maybe you give him just as many starts as Bryce Young and Matt Corral, and that number drops. More than likely that happens. That is most definitely a thing that could happen for sure in this because that's just the nature of the game.
Comparison though, yeah. Well, to give you a comparison, I'm going to jump to Bryce Young's just his stats real quick from the A&M game.
Yeah, go ahead.
And
hold those stats for when we get to y'all's game, and then we'll dive deeper into it because we want to get to those. Let's play out through this one because we only got two more before we get to the big one there, and we're already 30 minutes in, and that one alone is going to be a 30-minute conversation. Georgia holds the defense that I talked about of Georgia holds Auburn's run game to only 46 yards. They also rushed the ball for 201 there for the Dogs. Now, Georgia did give up 272 yards through the air, but an interception. Bo Nix, another fun stat for you. Bo Nix has not thrown an interception since playing Georgia last year. That's how long that streak was going, and it ended. He had a streak last year before playing Georgia. Georgia ended it. He had a streak coming into this game. Georgia ended it. So it seems like Georgia and the interception train continue that. Georgia, 432 total. Auburn, 318. Georgia's defense locked it down. I talked to you about this, and we talked a little bit about it, was Georgia's not going to let Bryce Young run around like he did on LSU. And he had a couple of times where he was able to do that, but then a couple of times that didn't happen.
Bo Nix. You said Bryce Young.
Oh, sorry. Well, you got me thinking about him now. That's why you can't say somebody else's name in the middle of it like that.
Well, no, I will say this too, that with Auburn, I really think if they would have put T.J. Finley in sooner in the fourth quarter, I think that score would have been a little bit closer than 34-10.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he came in and lit it up there in the fourth quarter.
For the last 38 seconds. Those last 38 seconds, dude, he goes like 60 yards in 38 seconds.
Yeah.
Against Georgia.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, you also have to think it was not Georgia's – it wasn't Georgia's starters in there. But I do get what you're saying. You can't give up those chunk yards, even being second and third string in there.
Yeah.
That's one thing Georgia prides itself on. When the starters come out, they still don't want to give up points.
I'm trying to see if I can find – I ain't been on the swing with the other one. I know this is Harrison's first year at Auburn, but it seems like he's favoring Bo Nix a lot. When you have a really good quarterback in T.J. Finley, who came from LSU behind Joe Burrow and led LSU last year to – well, it wasn't a great year last year, but I think he was injured last year. Or he transferred out. I can't remember one of the two. But he comes to Auburn, and every time I've seen him play in Auburn, every game I've seen him playing so far, he's done good. Did he not put him in sooner? I don't know. I would have put him in. If you're down like that, you're like, you know what? Our offense ain't got a lot going. Throw him there, 7 minutes left to go in the fourth. Just to see. If he takes a drive downfield and hits a touchdown, guess what? Keep him in.
Yeah, I think you do hit a nail on the head there a little bit with Harsin. He's got a little bit of the same Dan Mullen quality to him where you have a quarterback who's in there. And I'm not knocking Emory Jones, and I'm not knocking Bo Nix. We've said this in the past, and this is the knock to him, I guess. I guess you can't really shape it any other way. He's so inconsistent when he gets in games, especially the ones that matter, to come in, and sometimes he'll throw for 350 yards and run the ball for 50 to 100 yards. And then other games he'll do like this. He'll throw the ball for almost 300 yards and run around for negative 16 because he's getting sacked running around against a defense that you can't do that on. And that's the inconsistency there. Same as like we talked about with Florida, with Emory Jones. And I get that you want to be faithful to a quarterback and give him every opportunity to try to get back in the game and try to stick with that one guy. But eventually you got to make the change to try to be successful. And T.J. Finley is a good quarterback. Now, I don't know if it's he just doesn't know the scheme and doesn't know and doesn't have that big of a playbook to be able to do anything with, but give him a shot in that one. I agree with you on that.
I think what it is when Harsin coming in, his first year in Auburn, so he don't know the players, really well. He didn't recruit none of them. He don't know them. He's just coming in all of a sudden meeting the guys.
Yeah.
He don't want to rub people wrong. He don't want to rub his starters wrong, and I think that's where he's sucking up to Bo Nix just a little bit. Now, once again, Bo Nix is not a bad quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback either. He's inconsistent. And it shows in every game. I mean, you look at the LSU game. We went 23 for 44 passes. On 44 attempts, he only completed 23 passes for 255 yards.
Yeah, that 50% ain't doing
one
much.
One touchdown. No.
Yeah, look at Bo Nix's QBR rating for this game alone is like what, 36%?
I think so. Well, look at what, better yet, look when they played Georgia State.
Oh yeah,
went 13 for 27 with 156 yards.
That was the one right there. Like, that was the one right there. It's like what are we doing?
There is so much inconsistency with Bo Nix. It's not even funny.
Yeah,
and we're not trying to pick on Auburn. We're not trying to pick on Bo Nix. So don't start thinking we're hating Auburn, which, I mean, it's kind of hard.
I'll tell you this, coming from a Georgia fan.
I just don't understand the concept going behind. We have a great quarterback here and a backup. Let's keep the starter that's inconsistent in.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, coming from a Georgia fan.
That's my thing.
We grew up around, obviously, plenty of Auburn fans. We got plenty of Auburn fans that are friends. We got plenty of Auburn fans that are family. I mean, my dad's an Auburn fan, for Pete's sake. I get it. This is one of my favorite rivalries to play in just because I've got so many people that are close to it like that. I've got Georgia friends, obviously, that you want Georgia to win. But we all have the same concept. Bo Nix is one that I think a lot of Auburn fans kind of wished and hoped that he would get on the Gus bus and ride with him when Gus left, and it didn't happen. And maybe that's what needed to happen for Auburn. I don't know. Maybe Bo Nix just continues through this season and improves and gets you to an 8-4 season. I don't know how things shake out for Auburn in the end of this, but the conversation could be had about a lot of teams. We talked about Florida enough. Let's go back to Georgia when they had Justin Fields. Everybody called for, okay, let's see what Justin Fields has. When Stetson Bennett has been the starter, it's why aren't we putting these 5-star second and third string guys or third and fourth string guys in and see what they got? And it all boils down to a lot of it is having that faith in that quarterback. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there at Auburn right now. I know a lot of people are calling for get Bo Nix out of there, though, because this is ridiculous.
No, and there's so much inconsistency with him, and it goes to the head coach. He's the one that can make that decision. He can override everybody and say, look, we're benching you, we're going to you. And I hate to bring it up on you, but go back to that championship game against Alabama and Georgia. Find me another coach that's going to pull your starter from the whole season out and throw in a true freshman. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to pull your starter from the whole season.
Not unless he broke a leg. At
halftime, say, look, we're benching you. Yeah, unless he got injured or concussion or something major happened.
And, I mean, that's true.
That's where you have that coach that can adjust, that can make adjustments on the go and be like, okay, look, our starter's not doing great. You're struggling. We're going to go to the backup. We know what he can do. We've seen what he can do. We're going to let him give a chance in the second half. If it doesn't work, we'll bring you back in. There's no hard feelings. You're just not working right now. They have your number. That's what Auburn should have done. Because if Auburn comes out second half and puts TJ Finland in, I think Kirby's going to be scratching his head like, okay, how do we attack this guy? Yeah, we got Finland on. We know what he does. We got to adjust our whole defense for this quarterback now.
Yeah, and Kirby.
You got to do it on the go.
Yeah, Kirby will tell you.
You don't come out of halftime.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, you don't come out at a halftime thinking, all right, they're going to put the backup in, we're leading. You're coming out of halftime thinking they're going to get the starter in. We don't have to change much on defense. We're shutting them down. I mean, you look at the first half of this game, pull the ball score quick, and it was 17-3. Georgia's thinking, well, our defense is doing great. Don't change nothing. If Auburn comes out with a brand new quarterback, throws TJ Finland in there, Auburn's going to be like, okay, hold on. We got to make adjustments. How do we make them quick? And that's how you can catch a defense off guard. Because you have to adjust for every quarterback because no two quarterbacks play the exact same.
Yeah, I know Kirby said in the past, you know, their game plan is always going to be based on what the defense gives you. What is the offense giving you? Is the offense giving you, you know, TJ Finley? Is the offense giving you Bo Nix? And then you adjust around that. And could he make that adjustment at this point? I don't know. I know he's seen enough of it that he should be able to make that adjustment because it's happened multiple times to him. And I don't know that. But I will say this, and the sad thing is, Bo Nix is such a good football player. He's a great athlete. The dude can run like the wind. He's got a good arm on him. He makes terrible decisions sometimes. Yeah, he makes terrible decisions sometimes. But the one thing, and the caveat at the end of it was, I cannot stand when somebody loses a game and all they do is point their fingers at a referee. Were there some bad calls in it? Sure, there are bad calls in every game. But Bo Nix at the end of this game, I saw where he wanted to do nothing but blame the refs for the entire game. And I'm like, dude, it ain't all them. It ain't all them.
No, it's on you, dude. I mean, you had 44 attempts and only completed 23 of your passes. That ain't the refs' fault. They're not the ones catching and throwing the ball.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we've burned up a pretty good chunk of time here, and we still got a couple of the biggest games of the weekend to get to. So let's get right to them. Let's jump down to that Arkansas and Ole Miss game, a game that was another really good game. A nail biter in the end of this one. Ole Miss pulls it out 52-51. KJ Jefferson in this one lit it up. 25 for 35, 326 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 blemish on the night with an interception. Matt Corral, 14 for 21, 287, 2 touchdowns. Check this out. Both quarterbacks in this, just talked about it, 326 for KJ Jefferson, 85 yards on the ground, has 6 total touchdowns. On the other side, Matt Corral, 287 passing, 94 yards on the ground with 4 touchdowns on the ground. Both of these quarterbacks absolutely lit it up. On the ground, through the air, everything. You couldn't ask for more out of a quarterback. And it comes down literally to the last second. You know this. It only takes 1 second. And Arkansas got that 1 second. I know. You'll get over it. Arkansas got that 1 second. Lane Kiffin, as well as myself, thought that the game was over. Shouldn't have been any time left when there were 6 seconds left. They go for it. They don't get it. Have 1 second left on the clock. They get the touchdown. And you know what? Sam Pittman says, hey, I'm here. I'm here to win. Let's go for two and get it. Terrible play call, by the way. I don't mind going for two, but you gotta dial up a better play than that right there. And they end up falling by one. Ends the game. Also, messed up my entire pick, which we're going to get to. Had it at 6. Ole Miss is winning the doggone thing by a touchdown. And then the 1 second. Wipe that away. But what a great game.
Oh, man.
Especially coming off of this. You come off of Arkansas.
That was one of the best games.
Yeah, you come off of Arkansas getting dimed 37-0, couldn't even put up a point against Georgia in Athens. And then you got Ole Miss on the other side, who Lane Kiffin, he screwed them up with the play calling at the start of that game. But Ole Miss getting popped by Alabama, both teams came back into this one mad. I figured they would, and they both did, and they butt heads throughout the entire game. What a great game. I do like watching a game that scored like that. I also like a good defensive matchup.
Yeah, this one, there wasn't much defense in it.
No.
But there was a lot of good plays. And I hated I missed the last second. Had a buddy of mine. He's like, man, this Ole Miss Arkansas. Dude, I'm in. Listen, I can't see this. What's
I know. I was on the phone with you.
He's on the phone. I was like, dude, that's insane. No, I called you afterwards.
Oh, yeah, I was on the phone with you at the end of the Oklahoma game.
I was talking to him during the game.
Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, that was another good one, too, by the way. We'll touch on that one. But KJ Jefferson, dude, I don't know what it is between him and TJ Finley. When they transferred out, they got better, it seemed. And I'm wondering if there's not a problem in the LSU's coaching staff for quarterbacks. Because LSU's quarterback, like this whole season, and even last year, they have looked horrible.
Well, you do also have to look at the injury that they had in preseason there with the starter going down. Had he not gone down with, a broken leg at the start of the season, Max Johnson? Well, I don't know. But most people were calling for Max Johnson to start anyway, so it may not have mattered in the end.
Exactly. Max Johnson has the playing time. I mean, the thing is there's something going on with that coaching staff that need to get situated, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But Arkansas Ole Miss, dude, this game was – what?
I said we're going to get to a question that I did answer in the preview of this, and it was will Ed O even be on the – will he even be on the plane, or is he going to get left in the tarmac coming back to this one? And so far from what we've seen, that I hadn't seen him gone, but I expected him after losing to Kentucky to be out. Maybe I should Google that and make sure.
Look, real quick on LSU. Sorry, we're jumping back a little bit, guys. You look at the rest of LSU's schedule, They got Florida this weekend.
Ooh.
That's a loss.
They might win
Ole Miss
one game
this weekend. Possibly a loss. Alabama, and if Alabama goes in like they've been playing, that could be closer than you freaking think. But their next two games after Florida is at home, or is away. Then they got three games at home. But even the way Arkansas has been playing, I'd say Arkansas could beat LSU and so can A&M.
Mm-hmm.
LSU went from being, we're the big shot top of the barrel to we're down here with A&M.
Yeah, they did that last year, though.
That's what I'm saying. In one year, they dropped that quick, and they just did not recover this year at all well. Whereas Arkansas and Ole Miss and Mississippi State have recovered great and have continued to prove themselves, and I just don't see LSU doing so good. And I think there's going to be some calling for Les Miles and that coaching staff at the end of the year.
No, Les Miles ain't going back
you
to
can't
LSU.
Go,
they can call him, but he ain't going
not
go
Les
back
Miles,
to LSU.
Coach O.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think nobody wants that. I mean, Coach O and that coaching staff is going to be gone.
Go Tigers.
I've seen Les Miles because he's been there.
Old Billy Goat grass eating fella.
But they just got to change something. I'm telling you, dude. Hey, whatever voodoo works. But they have to get something figured out soon, or LSU is going to lose their powerhouse title in the SEC West.
Well, they lost it. They lost it last year. They get a national championship season, and then they crap the bed the year after it, and then not looking all that good this year. I will say this, though. Preseason, I do have them beating Florida, and that could still happen. You know, the shoe game last year we all talked about. LSU shouldn't have won that game last year, and they did. I'm always going to bring that up. I am always going to bring that up. You can count on that. For the next however long I'm alive, I'm going to bring that up as long as I can remember it.
That's one of the best things to happen in college football, especially in the SEC. Like,
my shoe!
To lose a game by a foot, literally. Literally by a foot? I mean, you can't make that up. It was funny.
It was awesome. Well, let's jump back to the Ole Miss Arkansas here before we wrap up. Treylon Burks is the best wide receiver that Arkansas has. 7 receptions, 136 yards, and a touchdown. Arkansas looked really good in this one. I'm glad that Arkansas was able to hang with Ole Miss, a high-scoring affair. We learned that if Arkansas ever got in a high-scoring affair like that, who and could they hold up? And they did. They did. Both of them did really well. Check this out. Arkansas had 676 total yards in this game. Ole Miss, 611. 676 total yards. And I want to look at something real quick. Let's go back to that game last week against Georgia. What's up? 676 against Ole Miss right there?
676.
You go back a week previous, 162 yards, total yards against Georgia. That's all they ended up with. If you want to talk about just the dominance of what Georgia's defense has been so far. You want me to look back at
Ole
Miss's from last week too?
611 against Arkansas.
Yeah, let me do that. Let me do that. I'll look back and see what theirs was against Alabama as well. Yeah, so against Alabama, Ole Miss put up 291 total yards.
Yeah, so they put 611 up against Arkansas.
It's crazy. So it's crazy how both of those offenses really just bounced back. And the defenses of the two teams they were playing last week just lights out. Night and day difference.
How to play.
Yeah. Well, Cody,
yeah, I mean,
unless you got anything else on that one, we might as well just do it. I mean, we're almost at an hour, and we hadn't even talked about the biggest game of the weekend. I'm going to let you start it, buddy.
You're going to do it to me. Start it. It's going to be a whole
Paul,
thing. Paul,
they ain't no way that the Crimson Tide loses to Texas A&M. Mark it down, Paul.
Look, there's some people I just don't like. Those are some of them. But I will say that game proved – two things that a bunch of Bama fans already knew. One, Pete Golden needs to freaking go. I am tired of Alabama's defense looking like crap. They're giving up these little bitty plays that should never happen. Like, it's insane.
Get it all out. Come on. Let it go.
I mean, I'm trying not to. Because I'm in a room that echoes. My kids asleep in the next room, so it's kind of hard. But this game to me, I'm just saying, like,
floor's yours, dude.
Be gone, dude.
Talk about it.
Last year, he put ahead of Matt Jones. I'm talking about it. But the way he's calling, yes, but Alabama has some injuries on defense. Okay. You know, missing Christopher Allen does hurt. That's one of the best in pass or defensive ends in the country, in my book. Having him doesn't help. And then we lose Sanders on a penalty or on an injury. He's out for the year. Okay, go to the third string. So they're already third string deep on linebacker in one position. Well, then you get Malachi Moore gets the targeting call against him. Well, he's out, so you get to another backup. That Branch is good, but at the same time, he's inexperienced. It shows he doesn't look back for the ball like he should. And when he's outsized, he's trying to fight for a ball. You're not going to do that, dude. You're 5'11" going against a 6'4" tight end. You're not going to outjump him. There's just no way. Pete Golden's defense calling is embarrassing, especially looking at the way Jeremy Pruitt called, Kirby Smart called. Those defenses they had, the players equivalent to these players, I say are about the same. Positional-wise, you know, you may have one better here versus here, but overall, the defenses are pretty much the same as far as talent goes. But play calling is just embarrassing, dude. There's been several games last year that we almost lost because of defense. This year, we about lost Florida because of defensive calling, because they're giving up small plays. They're not rushing. They're not getting any pressure. And when we do rush, they're leaving three guys wide open. Alabama cannot do man-to-man coverage. They've proved that. They're just – they can't match it. Pete Golden's defensive calling is not what any Alabama fan is used to seeing on defense. It's just embarrassing.
Paul, we need to fire Paul. We got to fire him.
He needs to go down there.
He got to go, Paul.
I promise you would have took a poll when Steve Sarkisian went to Texas – every Alabama fan was hoping he took Pete Golden with him. We're all praying he would win to Texas. But on the flip side of that coin, you look at Bryce Young. Bryce Young is a young quarterback that came in this season with a really big hype with an NIL deal. The dude didn't take a snap hardly last year. I think he took like one or two, like maybe. Comes into this year, nobody really knowing what he can do. Recruited as the number one dual threat quarterback in the country, number two overall quarterback in the country. We have not seen dual threat quarterback from him. If he would scramble, Bill O'Brien needs to use him in a better way. If you scramble him more, you get more yardage. And I'm not even going to get started on the freaking six pass calls inside the five. That was just stupid. I'm sorry. This ain't high school football. You got a running back that was 147 yards on 24 attempts.
Didn't even get a touchdown.
And didn't get a touchdown. Because once they got inside the 5 or inside the 10, we're going to pass. Why pass? The dude is running, getting almost 5 yards of freaking carry.
Paul, what are we doing throwing the ball?
Look, I'm going to quote that comedian, funny man, run the ball.
I agree.
What is wrong with people? Like, seriously, that was so aggravating, dude. hold on. He was averaging 6 yards of carry. You're inside the 5. He's guaranteed to at least get 6 every attempt. At least one attempt. Why are you not running him? That was – I will say the reason for the loss is on Pete Golden on the poor call on defense and Bill O'Brien on the horrible offensive calling for inside the five. Why would you call inside a five to four pass plays? It's just, I don't know. It's just aggravating. I mean, he had 48 attempts for 28 passes or completions. 369 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception.
Did a good job.
And the interception was a tip drill. But the interception he had was a tip drill. So.
You let me know when you want me to pop in a little bit.
And then you get to the fourth quarter and he throws. Well, I was
going
to say.
No, you keep going, quarter. Dude. I'll fill in a minute.
And then he's throwing them at their feet. Well, I mean, you get to the fourth quarter and Bryce Young starts throwing at their feet. I think that last two drives Alabama had, every pass he threw was at their feet. I think one got tipped at the line. That was it. One ball was tipped. The rest of them were just underthrown. And I'm talking about bad overthrown.
Yep.
I don't know what happened, if his arm got tired or what, but they need to get to do some energy bars or some protein shakes or something. Because that was just embarrassing. I mean, to throw a ball and it died to an open receiver at his feet was – all right, you can have it now. I'm done.
Okay.
If I keep going, we're going to have to change.
No, that's okay. I wanted to give you a minute to kind of go through it. Now, I'm going to hit you with my questions in it.
You can talk about the game now. All
right. Well, I'm also going to pin off of yours a little bit because I do want to kind of just get down to the clarification of it. So you want Pete Golden gone?
Yes. He needs to be gone.
All right. How do you feel at the end of the day about Bill O'Brien, who throughout the rest of the season has been – really good this first half. You're putting up over what?
Bill O'Brien.
Averaging 38 points a game.
Yeah, still not high enough in the SEC.
Is it still not high enough in the SEC or is it still not high enough for Alabama?
Both.
Because Georgia's averaging like 38 points a game, but Georgia's also only giving up 5.5 points a game.
That's what I'm saying. Well, I mean, look at all these scores. From this Saturday alone, okay, I'm going to call out every score. There's only one game where two games where an SEC school did not score at least 30 points. I'm not going to include Vandy because it's Vandy. Auburn scored 10. And South Carolina scored 20. Every other team scored over 30 points. You cannot win the SEC scoring only 38 points or 30 points a game.
Depends on how good
Georgia
that defense
34,
is.
Florida 42, which it was Vandy. Tennessee had 45. Well, yeah, but Tennessee had 45. Missouri had 48. Arkansas Ole Miss, which, I mean, those are bygones. And LSU didn't score 21. But even Kentucky scored 42 on LSU. Like, I think it goes back to the way they're calling the offense. They need to go back to running the ball more. I don't know what Alabama's stats are for the year. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. For running the ball.
So, just to kind of pin off of that while you're looking that up. So.
All right, here it is.
All right.
Passing yards for the season is 4,656, which is good. Our rushing yards, 2,300, 2,385. Why are you not running the ball more? Brian Robinson can run it. You have the backup out now, but Williams is good, both of them. And they're averaging yards a game for running is 183. Passing's 358. They're not utilizing the run game like they should, in my opinion. Could you look at his completion percentage on the year is 76%. 76% of his passes are being completed.
That's a good number.
Well, we're giving up on defense 58%.
That's still not bad either, keeping the team close
and
to that.
And a lot of those 50 – well, the problem is those 58% that are being completed are usually deep passes.
Well, let me touch on some things here and kind of get into it. Offensively, Alabama did nothing wrong in this game. You gained total yardage 522 yards to Texas A&M's 379. You outgained them on both sides of the ball. Both sides. Sure. Held them to only 94 yards rushing. So offensively, you did your job. Defensively, on the ground, you did your job. A&M, when they had the right field position, they made it work. That kickoff return for A&M made a huge difference. They made a special teams play. Having the turnovers that Alabama did. Alabama doesn't make mistakes, and when you make two in a game and you're able to hold Texas A&M but one, that's a big difference in it. But I do want to know so Bryce Young, again, throwing for 369 yards in this game, being as effective as he was, and I know you want to see the ball ran more. I get that. Trust me, I get that. I want to see it on the ground just as much as you do.
But in the fourth quarter,
what do you want to do in that situation if he's hitting people in the foot? Would you rather somebody else come in that situation, or do you want to give him the ball and give him the opportunity to try to win for his team?
If he cannot make those passes, if he can't make those 6-7 yard passes, put in the backup.
But I don't think you have a Tua sitting in the wings who can just come in and make that happen all of a sudden.
No, you don't have a Tua. Well, no, you don't have a Tua, but guess what? Looking at it same way as with – I'm going to get Texas and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler, supposed to be a Heisman candidate. They throw in their backup, and he makes Spencer look like a freshman or backup. Yeah, our backup is no Tua. But at the same time, he has a fresh arm. He had 48 passes in this game. If you sit there and throw 48 passes, all right, hold on. For instance, because you used to be a pitcher, if you're throwing a game, I'm going to just do a rough.
I'm curious to see where this analogy goes.
Say you get, you know, yeah, I'm working on it. Say you throw a game. So you throw. We'll say 87 pitches, okay?
That's a full game?
Your 88th pitch? Yeah, full game now. Well, no, we'll say full game you throw 96 to 100 pitches. That's about the average. If you in high school, if you throw a full game, that's about what you're going to do. Say 97th pitch. That 97th pitch you throw – is not going to be nowhere near what that first pitch was. Am I correct?
No, I don't know. I mean, you do get fatigue, but even late in games, guys are still throwing strikes. But that's just a whole different ballgame. Well, but my thought on it is this. Yeah. I get wanting to put in a backup in that situation. Actually, I don't. Not in that situation, because Bryce Young did nothing wrong. He made one mistake on the night. Again, like you said, that was a tip drill. There's no reason you take a starter out through who's almost throwing the ball for 400 yards.
The interception, I'm not counting against him. That was a tip drill ball that should have been caught to begin with. That wasn't his fault. But the fact that at the last – I want to say the last two drives Alabama had in the fourth quarter, just about every pass he threw was at their feet. I know the last drive they had, those three passes were at their feet, which I know I understand baseball and football is completely different. Football, you got the pads, the ball's a little bit heavier.
It's a little bit tougher to convert that analogy. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying. And you and I talked about this a little bit. You do have to give somewhat of credit to the 12th man, too, because Bryce Young did not have to play in front of a ruckus crowd last year. He had to play in front of the Swamp earlier this season, which is loud, but it ain't nothing like the 12th man. There's a reason it's called the 12th man in College Station. 12th
man, no. I'll let that go. You know, yeah, you had the 12th man. Yes, you know, that's fine. And I know people are going to say, well, you're just being an armchair quarterback. I may be just an armchair quarterback at this point, but I'm seeing it like I'm seeing it. And when I see a quarterback that's fatigued by throwing passes into the dirt that should be hitting receivers in the chest, I mean, you look at A&M, 31 passes. What, 17 passes different? And if you think it's easy to throw those 17 passes – I want you to do it. Yep. By the time you throw that 17th pass, your arm's going to be hurt. That's where I'm going with this is Bryce Young and Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien should have been, especially with him being in an NFL offensive position or coordinator position, should know when your quarterback starts getting fatigued, you should know. What's that? Hold on. See if you can pull it up on if I can or you can. What's the average attempts in college football for a quarterback?
Oh, that's a good question.
They throwing average wise.
I will see. I'm starting to kind of see your argument here and what you're talking about there. You don't feel like he should be throwing the ball for 50 times in a game, especially if he's not going to turn around and scramble. This should be a game where you're running the ball more, whether it's him scrambling or giving it off to a running back.
Not if he came in as a passing pocket quarterback, that's different. That means he's used to throwing that much. He came in as the number one dual threat quarterback, and I sent you the link to his recruiting from 24/7 Sports. If anybody wants to argue with me, you can look it up there.
Yeah.
It's on there. He is the number one, or was the number one dual threat quarterback. Not pocket passer. Dual threat.
Let's see. College football team pass attempts per
you
game.
You can't sit there and ask a dual threat quarterback. Okay, what is it?
Alabama ranks.
Probably around 30. I just wonder what the average is.
Well, that's what I'm looking at. Let's see.
So maybe
this is just this year. The top of that is Mississippi State. They average like 56.8. There we go. 37th, averaging 35 pass attempts on this season. Is what you're averaging. So he went over that about what 13?
He threw 48 passes. So yeah, 13.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, look at it like this. And you and I talked about this pregame. Now, you didn't record with me when we did the preview episode, but our conversation went a little bit like this. It was neither of us expected Alabama to lose this game, first of all. Second of all, you and I joked about the fact that Bryce Young has all the time in the world to sit in the pocket and throw. You and I talked about you can sit back there and make a sandwich, read a newspaper, go get your dry cleaning, whatever you got to do. That's how much time Bryce Young has had in the pocket all season. He hasn't had to scramble. He hasn't had to get out and get loose. And all of a sudden, Texas A&M's defense came in here, pinned their ears back, got around the edges, and was getting to Bryce Young. Look and see how many sacks there were in this one. I should have looked at this just a minute ago. But for the first time, also, with the exception of the crowd noise, you've got all of a sudden a defense that's pinning their ears back and is getting through that offensive line, who's getting through it and being able to get to Bryce Young and actually take him down on the night, which made a big difference for him as well. He never had time to scramble on half of these. So that you also have to attribute that to being part of it there as well.
They had 1, 2, 3, 4 sacks.
Four sacks. So I would highly doubt that Bryce Young has been sacked more than, what, four times through the beginning of the season coming into this game?
Okay, so let me go to that real quick since you're going to bring that up.
Yeah. I mean,
A&M, when they were sacking, they were bringing pressure. Yeah. They were bringing in pressure. They were bringing in two linebackers at a time. Alabama should have picked that up, and there's several ways you could have fixed that. Bring in two running backs, go into shotgun style. Bring in one running back going one out with a shotgun. And when they bring in that, let them bring that pressure because you're going to see it coming.
Yeah.
If you have two running backs in the backfield, at least two, what's the problem running two quarterbacks? There's no problem about it. Get your fullback and a quarter and a running back. Have your fullback pick up the block, running back go up for a little dump pass if he needs to be. You know they're going to bring pressure. And that's what they did the first half. If I'm not mistaken, I think all the sacks were in the first half. Come second half, third quarter, A&M was winded, and it showed.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama made their surge in the third quarter.
Oh, yeah. And then come fourth quarter, they just – I think that's when the fatigue hit Bama.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you get to the feet brush on, where those passes were hitting at the feet of the – defenders. I mean, Brian Robinson's 24 attempts. I'll go back last week against Ole Miss. Brian Robinson had 36 attempts. 36 attempts for 171 yards against Ole Miss. And only 24 against A&M. You have a great running back in Brian Robinson. Use him. They were not using him like they should. there's bad play calling in that game, and the two field goals that they got inside the five that should have been a touchdown should have been running touchdowns.
It is kind of strange just how quickly Alabama did go away from that run game. Not necessarily how quickly, but how they never really went back to it.
As a team against Ole Miss, Bama had 50, that's 5-0, 50 attempts on the ground. Bryce Young only threw for 26 times. And what's that? With 4 touchdowns on the ground. And only 2 in the air. Do we have to spell it out for you people?
What was Brian Robinson averaging a rush in this one? About 6 yards?
6.1 yards a carry.
Yeah. So I am a little curious because there were opportunities there where I know in watching the game, I saw a couple of times where he would try to run up between the tackles. And, he would still lean forward, get 2 to 3 yards out of it.
Yeah.
And then around the edges, he would get some. So I am a little surprised they didn't run the ball a little bit more.
That's the thing, though.
But I don't know. Maybe
he would hit the pile and still drag the pile 2 or 3 yards. He was dragging defenders with him.
Yeah, maybe that second half. That's another stat to maybe figure out. Is it the second half that he's not able to run the ball as effectively, and maybe that's why they decided to go away from that and try to throw the ball more? I don't know. Maybe Jimbo was putting some packages in there, just kind of really disguising some stuff, and just messing Bill O'Brien
think that's
up.
What it was.
It could have just been play calling on the other side.
I think
side,
that they were bringing in packages to make it look like they were going blitz, and they didn't want to risk sack, which is fine. But here's the thing though, is Brian Robinson. So as a team total, Bama had 34 attempts for rushes. Now 7 of those are Bryce Young's. So 27 runs were on the running backs, and that was it. 27. Whereas when they played, I'll go to Florida. It'd be a good comparison. Florida versus Bryce Young, again, 35 passes. The run game, 29. 4 of those were Bryce Young. When they get into a situation where they should run the ball, they don't run it. Once again, Brian Robinson was averaging 4 yards a carry, where Bryce Young was averaging only 6 yards a throw against Florida. Against A&M, I'm sure we're going to lose some listeners after this because they're going to be like, they're just rambling at this point. Bryce Young was averaging 7 yards a throw against A&M. 7.7, 6.7 on the ground.
That's pretty successful on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, but my thing is, if you're a coach, which would you rather be? A little 7-yard pass that could be intercepted, or a fumble, or to your running back that's averaging 6 yards, and the one fumble on the night was a miscommunication between the running back and the quarterback? It wasn't knocked out. No. It was just a botched play. I don't know what his fumble rate is for the year.
Well, I mean, we don't necessarily have to dive quite as deep into it.
I just don't understand why they did not use.
Yeah. So that was the biggest thing. Kind of.
That's going way too deep.
No, that's fine. So let's kind of get to where we're wrapping it up here. This ends up with a field goal there at the last second for A&M to pull it off by a field goal over Alabama in this one.
Yeah.
We can dive again. We can probably sit here and talk about getting deep into the analytics of it for another hour if we need to. But we're already starting to get pretty strained on time because I still got to go through this and cut all of it. But in wrapping, A&M played. I'm just going to say it this way: A&M played balls to the wall, better than they've played all season long.
Oh yeah,
they lose to Mississippi State the week previous and come into this game, nobody expecting them to win it, nobody planning on it happening, especially after Alabama dismissed Ole Miss and that high-powered offense last week. And A&M just came in here and played a game that I hadn't seen A&M play since 2012 with Johnny Manziel. And guess who was at the game? Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel. Well, I will say, too, that with this game,
this is also the first time I believe that A&M has beat Alabama since then. So, sorry, just wanted to put that out there, too.
Yeah, it's the first time since Manziel. But this game, I think, is the first time A&M looked like a top 25 team. They started the season off ranked 6, I believe, and just had a run of bad luck.
Yeah. I mean, they started off the season, you know, taking on a couple of easy cupcake games there. Go to Arkansas and get thumped. Go to Mississippi State and get beat again. Then you get Alabama and win.
And here's the thing: is you look at Isaiah Spiller, who is their best running back. Alabama held him to 46 yards.
Yeah, you hold the whole team to under 100 yards on the ground.
I mean,
it's crazy. It's crazy when you get to the end of a game and you see when a team has truly dominated another. The way that y'all were able to put up so many more yards and the defense was really able to stop the run game for A&M, just a couple of mistakes. And when the ball was turned over, it was in bad positions. And then you get a kick, you know, a kick six in there too. That just adds to it when you're playing on all aspects. And I know that sounds funny hearing a kick six, but that's what it was, you know, kick off, kick return. I know it sounds weird for you being an Alabama fan because the last time we talked about a kick six was also the last time that Alabama lost a last-second game.
Yeah. That's the same year y'all lost to Auburn, too.
I know, the prayer in Jordan Hare and then the kick six.
Same year, S.A.
I know, that was a whole mess.
Can't make this crap up. Anyways, so I want to mention that, too, since you did mention that. Return yards. A&M had 103 return yards. The 96-yard return, and then 4 punt returns, and then the 3-yard for the interceptions. Alabama, on the other hand, only had 36 yards total. So A&M was getting
good field position.
The good stops, and good field position.
That's what makes a difference. See, if you're outgaining the team as much as Alabama was, but A&M starting – in good field position, you're not going to have as many yards if you're not having to go nearly as deep downfield. But listen,
when you got to drive from your own 25, where they're driving from their own 40,
yeah,
I mean, they're not going to put up the same numbers.
Well, we did exactly what we talked about, that we were going to probably talk about this for a long time, and we have. This snaps Nick Saban's 100-game win streak over unranked teams. And this also is the first assistant to beat Nick Saban, being Jimbo Fisher. We thought it was going to be Lane Kiffin last week. It wasn't. I was, for my sake, hoping it would be Kirby just for Georgia, but it wasn't. It ends up being Jimbo Fisher. He did a great job. He play called he called plays like you need to beat Alabama. Do you have anything in wrapping before we jump to the Crimson Dog? Because we still got to run through our picks, run through some other games around the country before we can wrap this thing up.
Sorry about the rant, guys.
It's okay. But in closing, with Alabama and Texas A&M.
So, I will say this, and I didn't think about it until earlier. At the beginning of the season, I'm not mistaken, I did say the one team that's going to give Alabama the most trouble is going to be Texas A&M.
Do you know what's funny?
If I'm not mistaken, I think I called it before the season even started.
Yeah, it's hard for me to remember. I know I wrote down all my preseason stuff. And this is what I said preseason. I was like, Alabama's going to go 11-1. They're going to lose at Texas A&M. And then Ole Miss, they're going to go 11-1, but they're going to lose at Alabama. And then A&M is going to go 11-1, but they're going to lose to Ole Miss. So it's going to be a round-robin, three guys losing to each other, three-way tie for first. Never happened before. Obviously, that's not happened because A&M's lost a couple times. Ole Miss did lose when they were supposed to there. But the preseason, this is the only loss I had for Alabama, and more likely it's going to end up being that way. But I don't think you're going to have a tie there for anything in first.
No. I think they'll still win the West just because Arkansas. Is Arkansas in the West? I'm having a complete brain fart at this moment, dude. Yeah.
I need to get you this sheet I have in front of me that has them split East and West.
I usually have it pulled up. I've just kind of been scattered on it.
Yeah. And let me do this real quick before you jump into whatever you got on closing here, because we've talked so much about Alabama's flaws, all the issues with Alabama and everything, and a lot of the conversation here should not necessarily be on Alabama and what Alabama has to fix. That is some of it, and that's a lot of it, but we also have to put that aside on the other side and give credit to the team that did come in here and win this game, and that's Texas A&M. And I want to give a little bit of credit to them, and the first guy I want to give credit to is Zach Calzada. Zach Calzada, many of us, since Haynes King went down there for Texas A&M, counted him out. as a player who could come in here but was not nearly to the caliber of him. And he came in here, put the team on his back, drove downfield time after time, and got the job done for A&M. And I want to talk about the end of this game for Calzada. He comes in, throws a bullet to tie the game up after getting hit in the knee. Didn't look pretty. Jimbo Fisher even goes in the tent with him, hoping that he's okay. Somehow he's able to come back after that big hit on his leg and drive A&M right back down the field again, not to win it, but to at least get them in position to be able to kick a field goal to win the game. So I do want to give a lot of credit out to Zach Calzada to come into the game that nobody anticipated him to be able to succeed at and do what he did, and credit out to Texas A&M for coming into this one and absolutely putting on a show for not only the SEC but the country, because it was a great game. All in all, Texas A&M really shocked not only the country but us, especially because preseason, yeah, I had A&M beating Alabama, but before this game, you and I talked about it. I didn't think there was a chance in the world after A&M lost to Mississippi State last week. Now it makes me wonder, is Mississippi State going to have an answer there with Mike Leach against Alabama next week? I think y'all have to travel there too next week, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Yeah, that one's at Mississippi State. So you're going to have cowbells ringing in Bryce Young's ears again. So, but again, I just wanted to give credit to Texas A&M there before we jump out of that.
It'll be the same caliber as the Swamp in there.
Yeah. Did want to give a little bit of credit there to A&M because they did end up winning the game at the end of that one, not to be so much Alabama on that one.
Yeah, and I will say, too, just to pay something, I'll just piggyback off that. A&M came in, and I said it to begin with, they came here to play. They knew they had to play this game to win. And that's what they did. They came in to play to win, and it showed. So credit to them. Granted, it didn't go the way I wanted it to, or any of us wanted it to. But, and congratulations to Jimbo Fisher for being the first. And the thing is he's 1-4 now against Saban. He had the worst record against the assistant coaches, against Nick Saban. Everybody else had 3-2 losses. He had 4.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of hard to believe there. Well, let's jump down to the Crimson Dog of the Week before we jump back down to the picks from last week. You got your Crimson Dog of the Week that you got pulled up there. We'll run through it really quick. I'm going to fly through our picks after this, and then we'll pretty much fly through the games around the country as well.
I'm going to go with Kentucky.
All right.
And Will Levis. 14 for 17 on the game against LSU, 175 yards, 3 touchdowns. It is LSU, but at the same time, he has done a lot with Kentucky on the year. I mean, he's looking at 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions on the year. But I think he's looking good.
Hey.
I mean, he's leading the Wildcats to a really good year. This is the first time they've been undefeated in, what, since like the 80s?
It's the first time they've been 6-0 in a really long time.
That's what I'm saying. It's been a long time. So, and he's – I think he's a lot of that you can – grant or you can thank for Mike Stoops. I completely forgot his name there for a moment.
Mark Stoops, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Crimson Dog of the Week is going to be Will Levis.
I like old Will Levis. I think he's a really good quarterback. Mine, I'm actually going to go to the Arkansas native, and that goes to KJ Jefferson. May not be Arkansas native, but anyway, the Arkansas quarterback, KJ Jefferson, 326 through the air, 85 on the ground, 6 total touchdowns on the night against Ole Miss. Put the team on his back when it mattered to drive down the field as well to give his team a chance to win that game in Oxford in the end. Doesn't pull it out, but Ole Miss is who they play.
That's it. Yeah. Sorry. Be sure Mississippi State.
Oh, okay. Anyways, so
or from Mississippi.
My Crimson Dog of the Week for this one is going to be KJ Jefferson. So a couple of quarterbacks in there. But anyway, did you have something you wanted to add to that before we jump down to reviewing the picks from this past week? Because you sound like you had something there.
No, we're good. I just remembered that because that was a big headline in that game was he is from Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And all of his parents or all his family was wearing the shirts.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So. I did see that. Anyway, all right. Well, let's jump back in real quick. We'll jump back through our week six picks. I'm gonna put them up on the screen for you guys watching on YouTube. If you're still around, you may or may not be. Ole Miss out and Kentucky. That game. Arkansas and Ole Miss that we were just talking about there. Both Cody and I took Ole Miss in that one. I also took Ole Miss minus the 5.5. Dadgum, that 1 second bit me in the butt on that 5.5. So I go 1-1 on that one. Cody gets the win there. Both of us taking Florida. Boom, we get that. Still don't know why Cody decided to go with South Carolina there. But Tennessee, that's who I went with, minus that 10.5.
I just threw it out there, man.
Well, I know that you wanted to be a little bit different, but I figured you would have been different in that LSU-Kentucky game because that point on, we got Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky, and Alabama is who we all picked in that one. Both of us obviously falling in the Alabama. That puts Cody 5-2 on this week, me 7-2 because of the two extra spread picks. The number, again, like I said last time, is a little skewed because Cody missed out. I guess it was last week on the picks, 43-13. Still a winning record for sure there, and I moved to 63-20 on the year so far. So far we're doing pretty decent at picks. Not going to say we're the best, but we're not doing terrible necessarily. So something to look forward to, I guess.
As good as we did last year. Last year we did way better.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're not doing necessarily too terrible either in this week. But, hey, that's our picks from this past week. Let's jump to some of the games around the week. We're going to run through them really quickly here. Let's start off with that Penn State at Iowa, and I'm going to kind of just get your quick takes on it. I know Sean Clifford goes down in this one. I think if Sean Clifford doesn't go down, Penn State wins this one. But in the end, Iowa actually ends up taking that one down. How'd you feel about that one?
Yeah, that was a really good game. It was close than I actually thought it was going to be. I hate to see a quarterback go down like that, but I think Iowa being at home helped a lot. So congratulations to the Iowa Hawkeyes for a 6-0 start on the year with a 3-point win over Penn.
Yep. They move up to that second rank, and then you got Michigan and Nebraska, a game that came down pretty close in the end. Again, Nebraska has came in and upset a couple of teams this year. But number 9, Michigan prevails, continues their undefeated season, winning by a field goal 32-29. Hey, Jim Harbaugh, could this be the year that they take down Ohio State?
Oh, yeah. This is the year I think they got a head on. Michigan's looking more well-rounded to me than Ohio State is. But I don't think they're going to go much further. If they make it to the playoffs, I think they're going to get embarrassed.
Yeah, I can agree with you a little bit on that one. Moving on down to number 14, Notre Dame taking on Virginia Tech. It's hard to play in Virginia Tech. It's a hard place to play up there. What is it, Blacksburg, Virginia? I mean, North Carolina is a tribute to test to that after they failed to start the season there. Notre Dame barely squeaking this one out by a field goal, 32-29. Speaking of which, Florida State, they did win for the first time, or not the first time, but the second time this season, and back-to-back seasons beating North Carolina. Notre Dame, are they overrated? Even though they're only 14.
Notre Dame?
Yeah.
I think it's a little early. It's hit and miss. One week they look great. One week they look like they shouldn't be in the top 25. Just got some inconsistency, and I think they're still dealing with a quarterback issue there in Ian Brooks, if I'm not mistaken. He's injured, so they're with the backup now?
Yeah, he gone. He left last year. They had Jack Cohn in there, but I don't remember who their backup was.
Yeah, anyways, I don't know. I think it's a little early to say whether or not they're overrated or not. Which I really don't think they've played anybody, have they?
It's hard to say.
Let me look at their schedule real quick.
All right, well, while you do that, let's talk about a team that we both thought was overrated. Yeah. And that's number 6, Oklahoma versus 21, Texas. Oklahoma pulls it out 55-48 after coming back. And I think both of us agreed on this. We talked about this a little bit before. We've been saying Oklahoma is overrated. Yeah. I don't think Oklahoma's overrated anymore. I think Spencer Rattler was overrated.
Rattler's overrated.
Yeah, there's a reason that the crowd has been calling for backup in Caleb Williams, and he came in and showed you why. Lit it up in the second half, brought Oklahoma all the way back to win that game over Texas when Texas had it in the bag.
He went 15 for 24 with 211 yards and 2 touchdowns. Why isn't he starting for Oklahoma? We won't know.
No.
Like, I really think he's way better quarterback than Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, I said it was a bad look a couple of weeks ago with Oklahoma's fan base booing and chanting for the backup quarterback in Caleb, and then all of a sudden I start to see why. I mean, Spencer Rattler, he's going to be in the transfer portal by the end of this season, right? Got to be. Where does he go next?
I don't know. I think Lincoln Riley is really close with him and wants to keep him there as much as he can. So he may try to keep him around.
Is this going to be another quarterback that coaches are sticking with just because they've stuck around so long? Which, I mean, it's only his second season. So.
I hope not. Well, still, though, I mean, when you have true freshmen come in, looks better than your two-year starter or your first-year starter, there's a reason why he's not meant to play.
Yeah.
Or he's just not meant for that system.
Yeah, well, let's plow ahead with it. Another top 10 team goes down with Boise State upset number 10 BYU 26-17.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. I thought BYU was going to handle Boise State. Oh, excuse me. But once again, you got to watch these 2-3 teams, 3-loss teams in college football, man. They'll slip up and beat you without you even realizing it.
Yeah, no, very true. And then the only undefeated team, I believe, if I'm correct, I may be wrong on that, left in the ACC, number 19, Wake Forest. They survived Syracuse in overtime, 40-37. And then the last one that I want to just plow through real quick, because it doesn't matter as much, but number 24, SMU, does take down Navy, but only by a touchdown, 31-24. That was the closest games in the top 25.
Wake Forest is only undefeated as far as overall. As far as conference play, NC State's undefeated, Pitt and Virginia Tech still undefeated in conference play for the ACC.
Gotcha. Well, hey, I wanted to run through this. I've been wanting to run through this since you were there. We're going to redo them, and we're not going to dive too deep into this right now. It's much too late, and we've been going at this for quite a while. But I wanted to run back through who we both had as our top
four.
It's okay. As our college football final four. And Cody's lined up as Bama at 1, Clemson at 2, Oklahoma at 3, number 4, Notre Dame. Clemson, for the most part, they're out of it. They hadn't even found themselves back in the top 25. We will get our first college football playoff rankings come out this week, so we do get to look forward to that once it comes out. We will be sure to let you guys know it. And on the preview episode, we will go through that as well. Notre Dame, I don't know about mine. It shapes up like this. Georgia 1, Oklahoma 2, Clemson 3. And in 4, I had either Bama or Texas A&M. Right now, I still believe it's going to be Alabama, but Clemson, in both of our brackets, more than likely not going to be in that at the end. We're going to redo them as the season goes, but just wanted to – that was our preseason.
Yeah,
still don't look all that bad with a few of those teams.
No. I think once we get the preseason for the playoffs, it gives us a better idea what the playoff committee's thinking as far as who they think goes where, because y'all have a one-loss team over undefeated teams. And I just don't think Cincinnati has the record, the resume to compete.
I don't know.
Now that they're playing full schedules, Cincinnati's looking good now.
Very good.
But you put them against, well, Alabama ain't looking too great, but put them against Georgia, that's going to be a blowout.
Yeah, a lot of people talked about that Peach Bowl. A lot of people talked about that Peach Bowl game last year, and what I don't think people realize is Georgia being dejected in a playoff or in a bowl game where half the team isn't even there and half the team doesn't want to be there because where they want to be is playing for an SEC championship game, trying to move forward to play for a national championship game. Nobody had their head right in that game, and Georgia still won that game by a field goal, but they still ended up winning it. And last year is not this year. We can tell that from a lot of teams. What do you have? Sorry.
And we've seen it before with these teams that don't make it to the playoffs, and it just messes with them, and they just don't want to play. You look at Auburn a couple of years ago, playing USC. They should have blew USC out of the water. Or no, not USC.
Oregon.
UCF. Sorry.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I mean, you know the national champs down in Florida.
Go Tigers.
So, you know, it plays a role mentally in these players, especially when they're like, I ain't too into it, you know, whatever. But for the most part,
hey,
we'll find out come this week.
We got a lot of big games coming up. There's a few games just kind of looking forward to what we've got coming up. Florida, LSU shoe game repeat. Let's see what happens. Well, that one could turn out to be a good one. Georgia and Kentucky, two SEC teams, the only two that are undefeated left. They're matching up in this one. Let's see, you got Alabama at Mississippi State. Could turn out to be a good one. Arkansas, Auburn. You got some pretty good games coming up this weekend. You got anything in closing before Oklahoma we jump State. Out of this thing?
I was going to say, at a conference too, yeah, Oklahoma State taking on Texas is going to be a good one.
Oh, yeah, that'll be really good.
And I think there's another one. There's only one.
That's the Red River rivalry SEC, part two, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Another Oklahoma team coming. Well, hey, let's wrap this thing up. We did it for a good hour and a half plus in this one, so figured it was going to be a longer with the conversation that we were going to have to bring up with Alabama. And the bad thing is we could have gone a lot more in-depth at it. But you guys go and make sure you follow us on Twitter at SECTalk20. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube if you're watching. Hit the like button if you're watching the video. We'd appreciate it. And, if again, in the description, if you guys want to support the podcast, you can. Just click that link. It'll take you, give you a couple options. But other than that, unless you got anything, we'll check back in on you guys on Friday's show where we will preview Week 7 games. It's hard to believe we are halfway through the season. Halfway through.
It's going quick.
Yeah. 12 of the 14 teams are now halfway through the season. So it's hard to believe.
Yeah, and I missed about half of the preview, so.
That's okay.
But we're good now. We're caught up.
Yeah.
So once again, guys, we do appreciate y'all listening to our podcast. As always, do follow, like, and subscribe to us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And besides that, man, I think we can wrap up another great episode. Probably one of our longer ones.
Yeah, but definitely got to go down in the record books.
It is what it is.
Yep. Well, like I said, we'll check in on you guys on Friday's episode. Appreciate you guys listening.